What happens after we die? Is it heaven? Is it hell? Is it something else entirely? This has been a question that humankind has wondered and debated since the beginning of time. And different cultures have different ideas, different religions have different explanations for heaven. And that's what we're going to talk about today. And it's curious because we're going to discuss reincarnation. We are going to discuss the possibility that maybe there is nothing after death. We're going to get into this conversation with Catherine Wolf. She's been a teacher, social worker, chaplain, and the director of the Arup Center for Community-Based Learning at Santa Clara University. She has edited multiple books and has now published her own. It is called Beyond, How Humankind Thinks About Heaven. And in this book, Catherine went deep into how many different religions and cultures approach the concept of heaven. And what she discovered is fascinating. And she shares it not just in her book, but also in this episode of the show. Before we kick off on this episode of Chats with Gigi, I gotta tell you, I have really good news. I'm so excited about this. We've reopened the doors to the 3R system, my 90-day transformational coaching program, helping women who are transitioning or pivoting in life or business right now to go through that transition into success with less stress. This is a combination program that has group coaching as well as one-on-one exclusive coaching, just you and me, to create that customized blueprint so that this next chapter of your life, you can walk into this next chapter of your life with more clarity, confidence, and courage. If you are in a state of pivoting or transitioning right now, I want to help you through it. So click the show notes for the link to save your seats in this launch of the 3R system, or head on over to seizinghappy.com and click 3R system at the top of the page. This is Chats with Gigi, a podcast for women who are ready to step into their power, get unstuck, and create more freedom in all areas of life. I'm your host, Gigi Diaz, certified life and business coach, media personality, and multi-passionate entrepreneur. I've helped hundreds of women find the necessary clarity, confidence, and courage to build their dream life and achieve success with less stress. If you're seeking weekly motivation, practical and spiritual advice, and tangible resources to scale in life and in business, then you're in the right place. Are you ready? Here we go. Catherine, welcome to Chats with Gigi. I am so excited to talk about this topic with you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And this is just such a fascinating topic of conversation. I mean, the idea of what happens after we die, I think has fascinated absolutely everybody, you know, historically in every culture, because it's that space of unknown, but also supreme curiosity. And there's such beauty and so many similarities and also so many differences in the ways that different religions, different cultures, and different times throughout history have depicted the beyond, right? Like the what happens next. And so in your book, you dive into this, which I think is fascinating. The book, as we already mentioned, is called Beyond, How Humankind Thinks About Heaven. And before we dive into the book and the topic itself, I always like to start every episode of Seizing of this podcast with the question, how are you seizing happy in this season of your life?
How am I seizing happy?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I have a fortunate life. You know, and I'm actually celebrating my 46th anniversary today, and I have three wonderful children and three wonderful grandchildren, and I'm fortunate still to be able to work, to write and to do volunteer work. So I feel very blessed and very grateful, and feel like I, you know, I've had such a full life that if I were to disappear tomorrow, it would have been, you know, it would have been just a fine, full life. And so I have to say that probably doing all the research for this, which involved talking to many, many not only scholars, but believers, really gave me hope. It really gave me hope. You know, I went into these interviews thinking, ooh, I'm going to talk to this lady who's a devotee of Krishna. She seems really nice. We will have nothing in common, but I'm curious. Well, no, that's not how it worked. It was very interesting that as soon as we got into these conversations, we found common ground.
Interesting. I love that. So you are actively seizing happy right now by being in your purpose. And that is awesome. Living in your purpose is probably the most important thing that we can all do. So I honor you for that.
Well, I also think we have to, even if you're kind of getting old like I am, you have to allow room for surprises. And that was actually a big surprise to me.
Yeah, it's interesting you should say that. I was just talking about this on my Instagram account the other day, how we opening the door or leaving that door open for curiosity is one of the greatest ways in which we can continue to grow as people, right? As entrepreneurs, as moms, as wives. And it happened to me, believe it or not, at a gas station. I was pumping gas and I realized I was doing something that I used to do when I was in my 20s that I hadn't done in a really long time. And that is I used to pick up anything around me and just read it, right? Like now I get very consumed in like my email and replying to comments on social media and like planning the next big thing. But I never paused anymore to just read what was around me. So like if I was at a doctor's office, instead of being on my phone, I used to pick up a pamphlet and just read, you know, whatever they got in the lobby, right? Or like pick up a magazine and read whatever first page open, you know, whatever was there. And I remember that used to trigger so many questions for me, right? Because I would always find something that I was like, well, that doesn't make any sense. And at the gas station, it happened to me with the handicap sign. So there was a handicap sign there, you know, for people who needed help pumping gas. And I thought to myself, as I was reading that, I was like, I never would have imagined what pumping gas, I mean, you know, pumping gas is such a mediocre thing to do, right? Like it's one of those human must do's that suck. And then I'm like, man, I've never thought about what it's like for someone who has a physical disability to have to pump gas. And this sign was like, oh, honk twice if you need help. And then it was like, but if, you know, if you can get off the car and use the voice, they had like an intercom, then you can use the intercom, but only if there's two people working. And I'm like, there's never been two people working at a gas station. And it just triggered so many questions that I literally got on my social media. And I was like, this just happened to me. Please, if anybody pumps gas that has a disability, I want to talk to you. And I want to learn what this is like for you, for no purpose other than to just understand what this one human experience is like for somebody different than me. And it was so fun to be able to have that conversation with somebody who has a physical disability and to learn what that was like. And just leaving that door open for curiosity allows us to learn each other, understand each other, and want to I guess, to be there more for each other. Because if you don't know what other people go through and the things that to you are just everyday activities, an everyday activity could be completely different for somebody else. Right. And just leaving that door open is amazing.
Yeah. And I think right now in this moment, it's really important for us to keep an eye out for those opportunities, because with the last year and a half, we've been so isolated. Mm-hmm. And although we've all gotten a little bit more adept at Zooming, et cetera, it's not the same as really encountering a human in the flesh. And I think that we really need to try to get back to that. Because yes. I think, you know, something happens there that does not happen over a Zoom or a phone call, over, you know, a text chat or whatever. So that was a very rewarding thing for me that, A, people were willing to talk to me, and they talked to me in such a heartfelt way, and that it then really challenged me, because I come out of a kind of regular old Catholic tradition and I hadn't thought all that much about the afterlife or heaven. I mean, you just have these little kind of pictures that are usually sort of from when you were 10 years old, right? And then you figure, well, it's a mystery. I'm not going to think about it much. In fact, a chaplain here says she doesn't like to think about it much, because to get to the afterlife, you have to be dead. So anyway, I think, you know, it's something we're reticent to think about also, because You know, it's loss. We fear of losing our sense of self, ourselves at all. And of course, religions are all over the map as to whether we do lose our actual individual self. But it just, it really, I was enthralled with the scope of the human imagination and the way it could take people in just very different directions in terms of the stories they told and how they imagined the afterlife. But even doing that, there were some bedrock commonalities. Do you want me to talk about those a little?
Yeah, we're definitely going to dive into those. But before we do, I want to know, what was the trigger for this book? What was the moment when you were like, I know what I think about the afterlife, but I want to know what everybody else has to say about it. What triggered this book?
Well, I wish I could tell you a dramatic story, like I had an angelic visitation or something. No, I had published a book 7 or 8 years ago, and an editor liked it a lot. And he contacted me and said, I've always wanted to publish a book about heaven. Would you be interested in writing it? And I just about fell off my chair and called my husband in to look at this. He's a writer too. And he said, well, if you don't do it, I will. So I had to do it. But the thing is that after about, you know, I said, okay, let me take a shot at this. Give me 2 months and I'm going to do some research. And I, at the end of that period, I got back and said, look, I love heaven. Heaven appears a lot in human imagination, but it's not the whole story of the way humans have thought about what might come after life. And a whole dimension I had never thought about before was not just life after death, but life beyond this one that we could possibly partake in some way. And I learned that through the mystics, people in all these different religions who really had a sense that they, through meditation or solitude or being very ascetic, could sort of open themselves to be part of something beyond.
So Catherine, you've mentioned a few times that you were raised Catholic, right? Mm-hmm. Are you still Catholic now? You identify with that religion?
Oh, you know, that is, I'm the Catholic tradition is so rich and it was so formative for me. And I come from a family for whom it was not just something that was the source of how they disciplined us or just what you had to do, but it was really, they were very, very serious and very serious about helping other people. And so that whole teaching that came from the church through my family to me is just bedrock to me. And I'm in a community on campus here where I live that I, you know, I feel like that's my community. It is for many Catholics more and more difficult to identify with the institutional church, or at least the people between us and the Pope. Everybody loves the Pope. But what really changed for me was I came to appreciate my own tradition more because I studied it, but obviously was opened up to all these other possibilities. And it was that really deep faith that I encountered in the people that I interviewed that kind of, I mean, it really transformed my sense of who was my community, right? And now it's like every person of faith, everybody who holds a hope for life beyond this one, or a hope that's in some moments in life, we can transcend this life.
I just want to honor you for stepping so far outside of your bedrock, like you say, of your religion, of your beliefs, and doing it in a way that has that keeps to what you believe in, but honors that there are differentials out there, that there are people who have a different point of view, and to approach those people with love and with respect and with authentic curiosity to learn what their thoughts are. Because I feel like a lot of I was raised Catholic too. And a lot of the times, not just with Catholicism, but with most religions, right? We are often raised to believe like, this is what we believe. So this is what's right. And everybody else is wrong. Yeah. And not a lot of people step outside of that with authentic, loving curiosity to understand somebody who believes something different than them. So I just really want to honor you for doing that, Catherine.
I recommend it highly. It took me places I never went, you know, knew I could go. But, you know, there was one place in the research that I just ran into a big brick wall. And that had to do when I started realizing that the whole thing about reincarnation actually was a kind of a little theme in Western civilization, whereas I just thought it was an Eastern idea. Okay. Plato believed in pre-existence. The Mormons believe in pre-existence. There's even a significant kind of strain of Judaism where they believe in reincarnation. And so I thought it was a one-shot deal, you know, but we had this idea in the West of, you know, God created everything. We're living on the earth. We die. We'll get judged. Maybe we'll hang around for a while. And then the whole thing will come to an end with this big judgment. Well, you know, that was just so different from people who think about life after life after life, you know, mm-hmm. people, is particularly in the East, where after this existence, they could go to any number of existence, but it's all part of preparation to be enlightened in the end. That's kind of their way of speaking about how we talk about being finally in heaven with God and all the angels and saints. But there was a theologian I ran into, Mark Heim, and he wrote this book, and this was his conundrum too. He said, what do we do with this? We can find all the commonalities like search for justice and compassion, etc. But he gathered others who really think that if you lead a faithful kind of comprehensive life ordered towards a certain afterlife, and you're a Buddhist, and then I do the same thing within my Catholic tradition, and then a Mormon does it within their tradition, maybe we will get to different places.
I know.
That's what I said. I know, because I had this kind of thing that I think all of us have, that, you know, oh, you know, we each have a mountain to climb. We're on our path up the mountain. We'll get up there and everybody will be there, right?
Yeah.
Yes, I know. So that was really intriguing.
Interesting. So yeah. What you're saying is you found that maybe we're all climbing different mountains.
Well, maybe we are. And actually in Islam, there's this, in it, when the final judgment comes, it's kind of wonderful because all the Jews get to go over to Moses and all the Christians go over to Jesus and then the Muslims go to Muhammad. And they, I don't know whether they eventually have separate communities, but they are very much within their own tradition while being in this heaven that accommodates so many traditions. And I really like that.
Yeah, I kind of like that one too.
Yeah.
Why do you think that humans have always been so curious about what happens beyond this earth experience?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And I was so, I fell in love with Neanderthals. That was my other surprise. Some people kind of dismiss them, but others think that we really did, well, we did come from a common ancestor. And they found Neanderthal graves that are full, where the corpses obviously had been decorated, where there are tools, where there are even traces of like seeds. So they must have left sort of provisions for the journey. So mm-hmm. they were obviously thinking that person was going somewhere.
Yeah.
And then for so long that got packaged in the major religions, you know, Judaism, Islam, Christianity, and Buddhism, Hinduism, and you can add a few more. But lately it's all loosened up again. And you have people who strive to have out-of-body experience where they go sort of traveling. It's a wonderful man named Robert Monroe. And I went to, there's a Monroe Institute at the University of Virginia. I went for 4 days where I was in a little box mm-hmm. with the most incredible stereo system. And the whole program was oriented towards music being the way that could facilitate this kind of travel outside our kind of earthly plane. And it was really quite interesting, you know, and there was a guide. We had guides in between our sessions. And people did eventually, some people felt that they really had transcended their body and gone traveling. It didn't take me any place I hadn't gone before. But it was interesting, you know, and then certainly with people with near-death experiences, plenty of people who don't have a religion on earth and maybe have not considered where they're going after they die when they have a near-death experience. They have a very, you know, there are a certain set of experiences that most of them have in common. And so, you know, what's that all about?
And so when you say in your time at the Monroe Institute, where your experiences there didn't take you anywhere that you hadn't been before, was it an out-of-body experience to a familiar place, or do you not feel that you had an out-of-body experience?
Well, all the images that occurred to me and all the kind of little travel that I felt I was doing all yielded things that I already knew. Now, maybe I just don't have that big enough imagination, you see. And even when we were supposed to, the final thing was, you know, go to your final end. And different people had very different ideas about what that was going to be, traveling in the astral planes, that sort of thing. And I, you know, I have to confess, it's fine with me. I ended up with a great feast with all my family and friends and all people of good faith in Jesus. So I'm shaped that way. And when you come out of a tradition, you are shaped to conceive of these things in different ways. And I guess that's why Mark Haim is saying, well, maybe it really does take us someplace different.
So what did you find? What did you find in your research putting this book together beyond how humankind thinks about heaven?
Mm-hmm. Oh, beyond that, what did I find in my research?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I will tell you that one thing that merits a much longer conversation is that I had an assumption that science and faith were almost mutually exclusive ways of knowing. Mm-hmm. That science sought only knowledge of the material world, and that was the basis for their reality. And I have several scientists in my family, so I'm fine with that. And that faith really went through a sense of being drawn towards a being, and it go, you know, symbols and rituals, etc. And there's wonderful work being done by theologians and scientists, particularly people who are involved in what's called noetic science, where they're saying, no, our beliefs and our intentions and the events in our life shape us, and we evolve accordingly. And so you have Darwin's notion, you know, one of the bedrock of evolution, one of the bedrocks of the way we think about scientifically about where we came from. And they add in other kinds of influences than simply that, you know, we have a spleen that doesn't work anymore, you know, that kind of thing. And so I think that's a lovely, lovely development, actually. And I think it speaks to something that is so ancient. It goes way back to the Neanderthals thinking there was something ahead, which is that we still have that yearning. We still do. And for me, because I do locate myself within a faith tradition, I find that yearning comes not just on our own, but as a response to an invitation.
I love that. Catherine, how would you say that your own beliefs about the afterlife have been altered by the experience of putting this book together?
Well, obviously, I got a whole lot of new ideas about what it might be like. I the one thing that was kind of confirmed with me, because it happens in so many traditions, as you know, in the Catholic tradition, there's purgatory. In Islam, there's something called barzakh, but it's a state of purification. Okay, because I think most of us understand that no matter how wise we might get towards the end of our life, we're not quite ready if we think we're going to be enlightened, or if we think we're going to be in union with God. We may need some time to get ready, you know? And so there is, in so many faith traditions, obviously in the reincarnation faiths, this sense that we have our life on earth, but the ultimate goal, or our ultimate destination, I should say, may not come right after death. That there may likely be a time when we come to fully understand what we did, and maybe repent for the things we did that we regret, and you know, feel gratified by the things that we did that were good, so that we're finally in balance. And that sense seemed to go through so many traditions that even though I'd never thought much about purgatory, because I just thought it was a kind of minor league hell, the idea that being a conscious state of purification, I thought, yeah, that's realistic. I get that. And so that really kind of affirmed that for me.
Do you think there might be a way to go through that purification process, that conscious awareness of that purification while we're still alive, or is it necessary for it to happen after the human experience? Before we continue with this very juicy episode of Chats with Gigi, let me just tell you, happy entrepreneurs make more money. You think you're doing the right thing by taking on everything in your business, but really, you're just burning yourself out working in your business instead of focusing on scaling your business. Hiring an assistant or bookkeeper, customer service specialist, or my favorite, sales lead developers is going to free up your time to get quality work done. And I know what you're thinking. Gigi, I can't afford an assistant right now. Listen, I felt the same way when I first started as an entrepreneur, and it took me years to realize that it actually costs more money in the long run not to hire the help than it does to budget however necessary now to get the support your business needs to thrive. The best company that I found so far is Staffy. I use them myself because they offer fantastic assistants that are qualified in many different areas, from customer service to social media. They take care of all the administrative stuff so I can focus on scaling and doing what I'm good at. Their assistants are highly qualified and vetted by Staffy, so you don't have to worry about all the HR or the legal stuff behind hiring someone new for your team. Go to getstaffy.com/Gigi to get started with 2 free weeks of professional support for your business. That's getstaffy.com/Gigi to get started today.
Wow. You know, that is such an interesting question, because I keep thinking, I was so fascinated by the mystics who claimed, oh, you know, they write very eloquently and they're from all religions and I have no reason to doubt them, but they claim that they achieve some sort of union, maybe short-lived or whatever. And it seems to me that perhaps those people have a kind of capability or possibly a dimension that is active in them that's not in the rest of pragmatic people like me, that they're able to actually go to a place where they achieve that kind of wisdom. And I'll tell you, there's a beautiful book by Rabbi Abraham Heschel called The Sabbath. And he talks about how 6 days of the week, we go through all our regular life and do our work and whatever. And that's kind of going along on a horizontal line. The Sabbath is God's time. It's vertical time. It's a complete break from the world of the rest of your week, and that you rest with God there. And so those sorts of things make me think that possibly it might be something that very wise people could achieve. At least they're on the pathway towards it.
I dig that. Yeah, because if I can skip that, if I can skip purgatory, if I can skip, what is it you call it? Little league hell. Little league hell. If I can do that while I'm still here, you know, still can eat pizza and drink some wine while I'm
here. Absolutely. I agree. You're in a hurry. I can tell. A lady in a hurry.
I just want to get that purification stuff out of the way. Exactly. What do you think? Is it possible to truly glimpse or to explore, or to kind of take a peek, right, into what is beyond? I know that you mentioned you tried this 4-day experience for an out-of-body experience, not necessarily that particular looking beyond, but to see truly to what's next. Is there a way to do that? Is there a guide that we can follow for this?
Whew. Well, I think you can, if you at least want a sense of the pathway that we seem to follow at death, it might be interesting to look at the whole phenomenon of near-death experiences, because of the commonalities there, you know, the sense of going through a tunnel and then there's a great light and there's often a being and there's a judgment of some sort, often you doing it yourself. And people who come back from near-death experiences often change their lives on the basis of this. So that's one thing. The other thing that I ran into, and I cannot claim to be an expert about this, but there is a process called Phowa in Tibetan Buddhism. And it has to do with people accompanying the person who is dying. And there, and the masters among them who have this kind of extraordinary wisdom, try to lend that to the person who is dying, so that they're not stuck in what they call the bardos, which are all these kind of states you go through after life, but so you can actually go right to being what they call the clear light, which is their name for the ultimate kind of enlightenment. And so that's a fascinating sort of thing. And there's a book called, it's not the Tibetan Book of the Dead, that's kind of esoteric, but the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying. And it describes that process. And that was mind-blowing to me, it really was. And interestingly enough, the whole hospice movement is very aware of this, very kind of respectful of the fact that the accompanying of people and through death and providing a peaceful transition is absolutely of ultimate importance. And, you know, it makes you hope you have such a death.
Absolutely. I like that. This is such a beautiful, interesting topic. I wonder, what was in your research, what was the thing you learned that was the most difficult for you to process?
That's very hard, because I came out of this so optimistic. I mean, one of the things that I had to process was really kind of getting rid of this whole hell idea, eternal hell with all sorts of ugly torments that are tailored to whatever sins you committed. So I had to get rid of that. There was not anything, I have to say, there was not anything that was deeply disturbing to me. Maybe I could say this. I came out of it thinking, and I know people who say this to me, I mean, I live on a university campus that's totally devoted to technology. Okay. And, you know, I talk to friends and they would say, no, it's just all over. That's it. What, you know, they wouldn't say you're on a fool's errand. They wouldn't say, we don't think you're a smart person. They wouldn't do that. But they said, no, you know, it's must be lovely to think that. Sometimes I even felt like they were a little sad that they couldn't. But I didn't come out of it feeling kind of sad for people who just decide this is it, that we are physical matter. We got one shot, we're gonna become carbon, and that's the end. I'll tell you a lovely story. I live next door to a particle physicist, so his boy, the way he thinks is so out there. It's wonderful to talk to him about. And I asked him to interview him. And he came over and we had some coffee and he said, now, Catherine, I'm not sure I'm gonna give you much to think about, because I'm not big on religion and I don't think of a God out there. And I said, well, what is your idea of God? So I'm talking about, you know, harmony and beauty and our destination and peace and love, et cetera. And so I said, well, Savas, then what is your idea of the universe? And he said, well, you know, there is this extraordinary mystery out there. And there is this kind of mathematical order to it that we're just finding out about it. And there seems to be a great harmony and beauty to it. And I said, do you have a feeling we may be talking about the same thing? You know what he said? He said, oh, yes, Catherine, but we are swimming in a sea of semantics. Isn't that great?
What a beautiful, beautiful way to address the seemingly disconnection between science and spirituality, when they're really so close together, right?
I really think we're reaching for the same thing.
Isn't that amazing?
Of course. Yes.
What do you think we can do during our day-to-day life to find some of that hope, some of that light that you have found in the process of putting this book together, of these studies, of learning from so many other people and what they believe or have come to expect is going to happen next. You said that coming out of this research gave you hope, right? And every question I've asked you, I can hear that smile on your face with the excitement of all that you've discovered and learned. What would you say are some suggestions for everyone listening to this podcast right now, to this beautiful interview, to be able to keep that curiosity and find that same hope and excitement in the process of discovery, whether it be about this topic or about any other topic?
Yeah. Well, it really, what I would say that I was led to do and I am trying to incorporate in my life is something, a time, whether it's every day or every other day, hopefully every day, when you turn off your gizmos, you turn off all electrical things around you, you maybe read an inspirational passage from scripture or from even a novel or whatever, and you quiet yourself down and you think about what that's about, and then you open yourself up. And you quiet down, because the thing is, your imagination can give you great gifts in those moments. But also, I think you're opening yourself up to maybe what we call inspiration. And, you know, there's so many practice, various forms of meditation or of centering prayer. But I don't think you have to be very elaborate to, you know, to start this. I also think that on the basis of so many people who came up to me over the several years I was reading this book, they'd kind of sidle up to me like at a dinner party or after a talk I'd given, and they'd say, you know, I'm not sure about heaven and I'm not sure about God and I don't know, but, you know, I was really close to my grandma and I got to tell you that now and then I just feel like she's with me. And people told me this over, and it wasn't dramatic, and they were always kind of hesitant. And I said, oh, hang on to that. Oh, hang on to that. And I know that I had a brother who actually I opened the book talking about, and he and I were very, very close. And he died about 16 years ago, too young. And every now and then, in the most unexpected times, you know, I just feel like, oh, you're there. And so I think there's the practice of trying to be quiet and open enough so that you might actually receive some of those messages or some of that grace. That's what I would say.
I love that. I love that so much, because I'm biased because I agree. I'm definitely biased.
Well, you know, if you speak to a person of any faith, they're going to come down to that. That's what they all came down to in my interview. Yeah.
I mean, just think about it. You know, how many times our greatest ideas have come to us in the shower, right? Because it's the one time when we're not on the phone, when we're not talking to anyone, when we're just there, you know, scrubbing, and your mind is free to wander. Yeah. And it happens to, you know, sometimes like when you're driving.
Oh, yeah. Even a lot of people said it was when they're jogging.
Yes.
Yeah.
Jogging, working out, driving.
I have a kayak. I'm out there at least once a week on the bay, and man, it all spreads out. You know, everything, just the horizon is there, and the birds and the light and the water. And, you know, my imagination can take flight. And let me say, as I use that word, I wanted caution. Imagination is not something that is just froth or something that isn't real and we're just making up. It's a powerful dimension of human beings that I think we really need to study and kind of harness. And I think when we do open ourselves up and we do let our imagination wander, then we can really go beyond. Now, mind you, the imagination can take you to dark places as well. And so I think there's a way in which, you know, the training you might acquire in terms of meditation and opening yourself up also would apply to the imagination being able to take you beyond.
So interesting you should say that. I have this really great friend. Her name is Marianne Valenza. She is a coach and content creator. She's a holistic success coach. And we were having this interesting conversation once about meditation and about, you know, quiet moments. And I remember asking her, I'm like, you know, Marianne, sometimes when I'm meditating, I can't decide if it's just my imagination going off and creating things, or if it's an actual, you know, message, or if it's, if what I'm seeing is real. And she said to me, it's all real.
Yes.
She said, your imagination was, or not yours, but like our imagination. And I'm not quoting her verbatim. I couldn't possibly remember exactly, but in essence, what she explained to me was that when we are children, we are so much more in touch with that dimension, right? And so we, you know, we can close our eyes and be anywhere at any time. And we can, you know, see more colors and imagine more possibilities because we haven't been boxed into what is expected of us yet, right? Like, so then we go into school and it's like, this is how it is. This is how it's black and white. This is what's up, right? And we tend to walk away from that dimension of ourselves. But when you are sitting there meditating and your mind wanders off, whatever might feel like imagination is also real, right? We've just been taught to believe that our imagination is
just in your head.
And it's so interesting because I've never heard anybody else speak of the imagination that way until you right now, Catherine, with what you said, that it's just another dimension to explore.
And it reminds me going way back when we were living in little tribes and barely human. The place where there's a wonderful sociologist named Robert Bella, and he locates the origins of religious faith, kind of reaching beyond, in play. And he says it starts with the mother holding her baby. And of course, she's probably saying goo goo sounds and smiling and winking. And that's play. And then you get a little older and you start having games and you start imagining places you can go and other people you can be. And he says it's his idea that that's where religious faith began, that's where its roots are. Isn't that interesting?
That is very interesting. That's fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and I think the message is don't let yourself be limited. I respect basic doctrines of my faith, but I'm not limited by other things that are taught that are either irrelevant to me or have been they've been sort of eliminated from the doctrine of the faith anyway. So, you know, a whole lot of that sort of teaching is so human. It's so man-made, you know, and it's all about keeping people in order and how they ought to behave towards the other. And I completely respect that. We have, you know, one of the basic commonalities that I found between religions was that we did believe in a moral universe, and that the way we behave on life certainly does affect, if we have an afterlife, it affects what it's going to be like. But it's certainly, you know, to me, it's not like, oh, you're bad, you'll go to hell or you'll burn. It's more like, well, you'll get to the afterlife. And if you have not been a very generous, loving human being, you might have a fairly long period of transition.
I love that because I remember when I was younger, you know, like I said, I was raised Catholic too. And when I was younger, my parents used to always tell me, and my grandma used to always tell me, oh, because God loves you and he looks out for you. And, you know, he's always going to protect you, you know, but then on the other hand, it was like, but if you screw up, he's going to throw you in the flames forever. And I'm like, dude, this guy is so unforgiving.
Yes.
Like, what is wrong with this dude? And then as I got older, I was like, I just can't imagine that such a powerful force, right, such as God, as depicted in any and all the religions, would give us so much free will, right? Because we all have free will in all of these religions, right? Give us a limited time of 60 to 80 years.
Yeah, which we may borrow.
Yeah, which like for to get it right, right? Yeah. And if you screw up, you're in hell forever. Like that just doesn't add up to me. And I was like, it just doesn't make any sense that an entity so brilliant as to create the perfect mechanism of this earth, of this galaxy and everything beyond it would say, y'all got to get it right in 80 years or otherwise.
Exactly. But you know what? If you read in our tradition, if you read the scriptures, if you read the New Testament, Jesus didn't say a lot about things like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's grown up, you know, and it has to do with understanding that people need to live a morally upright life, but using a club to get them to do so. I love the Jewish notion, which is that they just put the idea of hell aside entirely, because they say that to conceive, that they can't conceive of a God who is all loving, who would consign somebody to eternal damnation. It doesn't work. Right. It's like an oxymoron. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know, so we're back to the progression stage.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So I got a little Jewish going on in my beliefs here.
Oh, I do like, too.
I have a little Jewish. I have a little Catholic. Yeah. I definitely have a little Buddhist.
Yes.
I have all sorts of things going on here.
Yeah. And it's fun to find that out when you learn about these. I found out that I think like a Jew. I really do. But then I was, and I am a Christian, but boy, I really like the Sufis. I love the mystical Sufi. They're the mystical sort of branch of Islam. And they're just wonderful poetry. Rumi is my favorite. So I know
that.
Yeah.
And I just think it's so beautiful to give yourself permission to explore, right? Like, you're not denying your faith. Yeah. You're not denying your foundation. If you're just giving yourself permission to explore, ask some questions, read a couple books, you know, see how the Torah differs from the books you read, you know, and just out of curiosity, see what's going on in these other books and read them with an open heart and ask the questions with love, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Couldn't say it better myself.
Oh my goodness. Catherine, it's been such a pleasure talking to you. I feel like I could talk to you for hours and hours and hours about topics like this, because the, you know, the questions can go on forever. And I think
they the exploration will, they will go on. Well, thank you. This has been such a pleasure, Gigi.
Thank you so much for being on the show with us. Make sure that you grab your copy of Catherine Wolfe's book, Beyond How Humankind Thinks About Heaven. It is available on all platforms. You download it, order it, hard copy, soft cover, the whole shebang. Just get yours and dive into this conversation with us. I would love to know your thoughts. Make sure as you read, as you listen, you can screenshot your phone as you listen to this episode of Chats with Gigi. Share it on your Instagram and make sure you tag me at Gigi Diaz Live. Catherine and I would love to know your thoughts, your discoveries, your exploration on this topic, so we can keep the conversation going with love and respect and lots of curiosity. Catherine, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you, Gigi. Take care.
Thanks so much for tuning into this episode of Chats with Gigi. If you enjoyed the show, let me know by leaving a review on iTunes. This way, I can keep bringing you more of what you love. If you don't follow me yet, let's connect. You can find me as Gigi Diaz Live on all social media platforms, or head over to my website at gigidiaz.com. I can't wait to chat with you again in the next episode. Until then, I'll be sending lots of love and light your way.